Kamala Harris for the people.
You, it's not the people, it's the f-ing state, okay? It's a state apparatus. It's not the people. The people don't even know what the hell's going on in this trial. And they're not the ones exercising state power and prosecuting so-and-so. So let's just get that clear.
That's right. F you, Kamala Harris. You're not serving the people. You are serving the system of capitalism imperialism that is ruling over the people. And we'll have more to say about that in just a minute. But first, my name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm joined today by Annie Day.
Very glad to be here. We are going to do in today's show what you just heard Bob Avakian doing in that clip, cutting through some of the bullshit of the ways that people are caught up in and desperately allowing themselves to be deluded by the Democratic Party, a party of war crimes and crimes against humanity. And we're going to do this for the same reason that Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, does, because we recognize that this system of capitalism and imperialism cannot be reformed. It is the source of all the needless suffering here and all over the world, and it needs to be overthrown through an actual revolution. And we recognize, learning from Bob Avakian, that we are in a rare time where the revolution that we need is more possible. And we are inviting you to be part of this, to step into this, and to join the forces that are serious about bringing into being a whole new world.
It is simply a fact that no one else in this country besides Bob Avakian and the RevComs he leads, no other political force, no other leader, is even talking about making a real revolution. Why is this revolution necessary? What's the strategy for this revolution? How do we take it up and carry it out? What is the future that we're fighting for? What difference will it make for you to get involved in this? Bob Avakian is breaking all of this down, along with so much more, every week in his social media feed, at Bob Avakian Official. Bob Avakian is a leader like we have never had before in this country, and like no one else in the world today. He is the architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the new communism. He's developed a strategy for revolution. He's developed a vision and a concrete blueprint, written a constitution for the new society and system that this revolution will bring into being, a new society that is uprooting all the oppression and exploitation that just stalks the people of the planet today. And Bob Avakian is actively leading to make this revolution real in this time. This is why we follow him, and why, if you want to get humanity free, you need to follow him as well.
And we're going to be hearing directly from Bob Avakian later in today's show. We're also going to be talking about a campaign to get Bob Avakian's social media out through all of society, changing the terms and waking people up. We're also going to hear an interview that Alan Goodman, a correspondent with RevCom.us, Revolution Newspaper, did with Shay Parnas, a spokesperson from the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem, on a devastating report that they did on the torture, the systematic torture of Palestinians in Israeli prisons called Welcome to Hell. This is an especially important interview to be playing now. As we're recording today's show, Israel has begun a military invasion of the West Bank. They're tearing up roads, they're surrounding hospitals, they're attacking children's summer camps. This is a very dangerous situation. It's one that everybody needs to not just pay attention to, but to stand up and demand it stop.
Yeah, this is an extremely horrific development, and we have to be watching it, and people do need to stand up against it. Now, to get us started in today's show, I have a few more words to say about Kamala Harris for the people.
Every day in the courtroom, I stood proudly before a judge, and I said five words: Kamala Harris for the people. And to be clear, my entire career, I've only had one client, the people.
That is the bullshit that tens of thousands of Democrats lost their deluded minds cheering for at the Democratic National Convention. But it's a fucking lie. For 27 years, Kamala Harris was a prosecutor and then attorney general in California. Harris's client during that time was not the people. Her client was the system that rules over the people. She served then, and she is still serving now, the system of capitalism imperialism, a system that rests on white supremacy, male supremacy, ruthless exploitation, vicious oppression, and plunder all over the world. Now, some people claim that Harris was a progressive prosecutor. Bullshit. Harris was an enthusiastic part of the machinery of state terror, of mass incarceration and brutality that has robbed generations of Black and brown people of their lives and their futures. Harris energetically enforced California's notorious three strikes law, California's version of stop and frisk, and the nationwide so-called war on drugs. During the years that Harris was a prosecutor and then attorney general, California's prison population skyrocketed. It went from 87,000 in 1990 to 173,000 in 2006. Black people make up just 6% of California's population, but they make up 29% of its prison population. Latinos are 39% of the population, but 43% of those imprisoned. Harris didn't do this for the people. She did this for the system that rules over and brutally oppresses the people. In 2011, the crowding in California's prisons was so severe that in one prison, 54 prisoners were forced to share a single toilet. Inmates were dying every 5 or 6 days from lack of medical care. Things were so bad that the U.S. Supreme Court ordered California to reduce its prison population. It ordered California to release 5,000 nonviolent inmates. How did Kamala Harris, for the people, respond? For nearly 4 years, Harris and the Democratic governor, Jerry Brown, refused to carry out the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. They would not let the prisoners out. One law professor compared this to the Southern racist governors during the Jim Crow South who refused federal court orders to desegregate the schools in the 1950s. Progressive prosecutor, my Harris didn't do this for the people. She did this for the system that rules over and brutally oppresses the people. And what about police murder? You know, that epidemic that so many people know as an open wound in this country that steals life after life of mainly Black and brown and Native youth? During her years as San Francisco's DA and then California's Attorney General, there were almost 1,200 police-involved killings in California. Out of all of those 1,200 killings, only 2 times were charges brought against police. Harris even refused to support a 2015 bill that would have required the state's attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate police use of deadly force. She made a point of saying it wasn't her job to investigate police killings. Think about that. I mean, what the f*** is a job of a prosecutor if not to prosecute crimes? Except apparently for the crimes that she and the system she serves clearly doesn't give a rat's ass about, like police murder after murder after murder more than 1,200 times. Harris didn't do this for the people. She did this for the system that rules over the people. And then there's her claim that,
as a young courtroom prosecutor in Oakland, California, I stood up for women and children.
Again, bullshit. Harris wouldn't prosecute murdering police, but she did aggressively prosecute parents who were often impoverished just because their kids were late for school or missed class altogether. She took glee in this. Kamala Harris needs to keep the words "for the people" out of her mouth. Harris didn't do any of this for the people. She did this for the system that rules over and brutally oppresses and terrorizes the people. And now she is running for the highest office in the land. And if you support her, this is what you are signing up for and reinforcing. Bob Avakian cuts to the heart of this in his social media dispatch, Revolution 71.
Kamala Harris is not part of any real solution. She is a big part of the problem. And what is the problem? It's this system of capitalism imperialism, which Harris serves, which all these politicians have to serve if they want to get in office and stay in office. especially any high office like president. It's this system that is the fundamental cause of all the hell that people are put through, not just in this country, but all over the world. It's this system that needs to be swept away, overthrown through an actual revolution, and replaced by a much better system.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
On this theme, we open the show today with Bob Avakian talking about what "for the people" really means under this oppressive system. And we want to play the fuller segment of the interviews where that's drawn from. Here, BA digs more into the question of the rule of law and what that really means under this system. And as you'll see, for sharp exposure and a biting sense of humor, this system's utter hypocrisy, there is nothing like this. These interviews were done by the RNL show in 2022, Heart and Soul and Hardcore for Revolution. And you can watch them in full here on our channel.
You know, when you were describing these institutional means, you're talking about the importance of, even under the new, in the new society, the importance of law, the rule of law in that society, that socialist republic in North America. And you've also done a lot of writing and thinking about the importance of the rule of law under this system, including how oppressive the law is and racist at its core, and all this stuff that the masses of people, particularly the people on the bottom of society who catch the hardest hell, just experience as a tremendous detrimental force. And one provocative statement that you've made that is really sharply posed in society today is, you write that there is or should be no such thing as victims' rights, particularly as applied to criminal proceedings. And this ties together a couple of themes that have happened, including the woke stuff itself is in some ways interpenetrating with this victims' rights movement. And so I just think it'd be important in terms of speaking to the, you know, we want to move, as we're moving towards a conclusion to these interviews, I'm going to be talking about more about the basic people in society, at the bottom of society, that we, I wanted to bring this out in terms of, have you speak to this question of, there should be no such thing as victims' rights, and related to the question of how important it is that there is the rule of law.
Yeah, well, let's just get right to the core of it. In simple, basic terms, victims' rights is a tool of the state of prosecution, of the prosecution in going after people that it's prosecuting. It's, you know, it's another, you know, weapon in the arsenal of the prosecution. That's the whole reason why they have victims' rights. Now, to understand that, you have to understand, like, what is the purpose of law? You know, why do we have laws? It is the basic purpose is to have a societal basis, a basis on in the society as a whole to adjudicate, that is, to resolve conflicts among the people. And, you know, and if you go back in early history, the reason laws and the state arose and so on was that a lot of stuff in early society was carried out by just individual acts of revenge. You know, you stole from me, so I steal from you, or, you know, you raped my daughter, so I'm going to, you know, kill you, et cetera. And this is, you know, that just leads to chaos in society. So as societies evolved and as a state evolved and arose, then laws were a means of resolving conflicts in society through the institutions, yes, the ruling and governing institutions of society, rather than through individual conflict. That's the point of the law. So if you think about that, when someone is charged with a crime, maybe they rob somebody, the whole point is you don't have a duel between, you know, let's have a duel between the person who was robbed and the person who robbed them, and the person who was robbed gets the first shot. That's not the way, you know, society resolves robbery. What happens? The state comes in the name of the people. You know, this one thing that really bugs me, I just have to say, the people of the state of California against so-and-so. F*** you, it's not the people, it's the state, okay? It's a state apparatus. It's not the people. The people don't even know what the hell's going on in this trial. And they're not the ones exercising state power and prosecuting so-and-so. So let's just get that clear. Okay, but what is happening here? The state as an institution is stepping in to this conflict, removing it from the personal realm between whom the person who was robbed and the person who allegedly did the robbery. We have to say allegedly because we don't know if they're guilty or not. And there's supposed to be a presumption of innocence, which is a joke. And I can tell a joke about that in a minute from real life. But they step in and they say, let's take this out of the realm of personal conflict and personal vendetta, personal revenge, and let's have it be decided on an institutional basis for the society as a whole. And that's where, you know, that's why you have trials, and that's where the rule of law comes in. The laws aren't written to describe this dispute between these two people. They're written to describe things in general. And then those general principles of the law are applied to the particular cases. And then the prosecution comes in and makes its case, presents its evidence, and defense counters that and presents its evidence and so on. Well, you know, okay, if you're going to take it out of the realm of personal conflicts, what the hell does victims' rights have to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's reintroducing the personal into what should be not a personal thing. You're taking people who are supposedly caused to suffer by this, not maybe the person directly if they're alive, or their relatives or loved ones or friends or whatever. What have they got to do with this official institutionalized process? Nothing. They should have nothing to do with it. This is a question of the state taking it out of the realm of personal conflict and presenting it as a matter of law. So if you're going to do that, then you shouldn't have any, and all you're doing, first of all, the prosecution has a great advantage. It's the official institution that people have superstitious, you know, religious life belief in. And, you know, it has all kinds of resources that most people, especially poor people who are brought to trial, don't have. In fact, a lot of people, one of the main, in fact, probably the main prosecution tactics is to pile on charges so that people who are in jail can't make bail, which is another problem, you know, will plead to lesser charges when, you know, all these bogus charges were piled on to get them to plead to it. That's the main way the prosecution operates. So they don't need any additional advantage by bringing in, you know, things that are going to prejudice the case against the defendant, which is what victims' rights represents. And I said I would tell this joke, and I have to tell this joke. It's a personal thing. It has to do with my father, who was a judge. Oh, his father was a judge. How could he be a revolutionary? Well, you know, I will say one thing on behalf of my father, who's not around anymore. You know, he was a liberal judge who actually believed in the rights of defendants and due process and all that. And he actually made a key decision right before the Huey Newton trial, which struck down the way that they were eliminating black jurors from juries. So he was a liberal judge, but he, you know, we'd go around and, you know, I'd tell him, well, you know, you do good things, but you're within a certain system. So we went around on that. But he had a great story to tell as a judge. And this has to do with how bogus the presumption of innocence is, how nobody really believes it. And no, everybody who comes to become part of a jury pool doesn't believe it. And all the culture is against it. I mean, think of the culture. Somebody exercises their right, their constitutional right to legal assistance. Oh, you're lawyering up. Think about it. You know, it's made a dirty thing that you're exercising your constitutional right to have a lawyer. Oh, he's lawyering up. But anyway, so my father's, they were going through voir dire in this one trial where somebody was accused of robbery, I think. And voir dire is when they question the jurors to see if they can be impartial, which, of course, is, again, is a farce because of how they're conditioned by the whole operation of society and all the culture, the cop shows, you know, all this bullshit that always presents the police as, you know, beleaguered people trying, you know. And by the way, I want somebody to show me a cop show where they don't violate the law, the cops. That's a challenge. Oh, you know, sooner or later you watch a cop show, they're going to violate the Constitution and violate people's rights in the name of something greater, you know, stopping this terrible criminal. Anyway, so they're having voir dire in this trial, and the defense lawyer is questioning this one woman potential juror. And he said, now, you do understand the presumption of innocence, right? She said, well, I think so. He said, well, you understand it means that if my client, if you can't find that he's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, then you have to let him go. You have to find him not guilty. She said, yeah, I think I understand it. So you understand that if the prosecution doesn't make his case beyond a reasonable doubt, then you just have to let him get up and walk right out of this courtroom. And she said, yeah, but what if he does it again? And this speaks, my father used to love to tell that story because it shows what defense attorneys, which he used to be, are up against, you know, and how the presumption of innocence is a non-operative joke. So, you know, already the defendants, you know, can't make bail, charges piled on and so on. They're already going in at a disadvantage. And then on top of it, you bring in these people to prejudice things further by, you know, talking about victims' rights. That should have no place in a legal system.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Trying to look past this thing that's between us, wondering when all this anger will fade. The stars look the same from where we are standing. Why can't we fix this mess we've made? Let's not forget that our fates are as one, just because we feel numb and betrayed. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side. Forever, you and me, we are stronger together, hoping to find a path to forgiveness, knowing that pride always gets in the way. We all want a place where it's safe to be human, the welcome embrace of a brand new day. Let's not allow what we have to be lost just because of what someone might say. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side. Forever, you and me, we are we're stronger together.
We are now 2 weeks into a major campaign to get Bob Avakian's leadership and his social media dispatches, his real-time revolutionary leadership, in front of millions to make these a major poll of engagement, of controversy, of debate, and of contention throughout society right now in these very momentous times. So Annie has been part of leading this campaign. And I wanted to ask you to give us a sense of what's the impact been so far.
So throughout the Democratic National Convention, people were part of raising over $13,000. This is just the beginning of what's required. We want to thank everyone who gave and was part of raising those funds. And that enabled us to kick this campaign off in a pretty good beginning level. And so BA's videos have appeared as of now on over a million screens, phones, tablets, computers. And of those over 1 million over 100,000 have watched some proportion. And a significant number of those people watched one of these messages all the way through. So again, that's a beginning, but there's been a lot of dynamism in that, of people actually beginning to hear BA's voice and engage the content.
It's a, there's 330 million people in this country, so it's a small sample, but it's actually a pretty significant percentage of engagement and response. How much sense do we have so far of what the response has been?
Again, this is just initial, but we have a pretty interesting sense of response. I mean, one is almost 600 people have subscribed to BA's YouTube, to his channel, to hear the messages that are coming out as things develop. So that's one metric or measure of what you can tell with the impact you're having. And two, there's been a kind of storm of debate that's kicked off in the comments of the BA's YouTube videos. And that's been very interesting, and both a lot of people responding really enthusiastically and positively, and a lot of people hating what they're hearing, either because they're super pro-Democrat, pro-America, a lot of Zionists, and a lot of anti-communism. And one of the interesting things has been the debate, though, the contention. You know, on one of the videos, all these people are writing lies. These are all lies. And other people who are just themselves hearing it for this first time are responding, where's the lie? Or straight facts. One person wrote on one of the videos, tell it like it is, brother. Someone else wrote, thank you, mate. Another response. And this is kind of, then you're tapping into kind of more deep agonizing. One person wrote, you are absolutely right, but how do we change it? How do we get the mass of sheeple to see this? Someone else responded in another video, read his work, people. This is a call to action, not an education. And then, you know, in response to another video on actually revolution number two on when was America ever great? Never. Someone responded, I am so in love with you right now. I'm going to let my family hear this. And I think you see in this, you know, in a really beginning, again, a really small kind of microcosm way, you see what it can start to change if BA's voice is reaching millions of people, shaking things up, puncturing the lies and the frameworks of this system, and then also starting to attract the serious ones, starting to attract the thousands who then sign up for BA social media and start getting trained and understanding why we need a revolution, how that revolution is possible, and the role they can play, like this woman, in spreading this to others and in getting organized and stepping forward. So again, this is just at the beginning phase of that process, but I think you can see the real dynamism of this in this moment.
One of the things that is so important to understand is that Bob Avakian in these dispatches at Bob Avakian Official is not just cutting through the bullshit like no one else. He's not just bringing alive the need for revolution on a level that no one else is doing. He's not just agitating about the crimes of this system and lifting our sights to what's possible with a revolution and breaking down the strategy. He's doing all of that, but he's actually also applying the strategy in real time. And every day, every different the rulers, different forces in society, different so-called leaders are putting their take on what people should be doing, how they should be acting. They're influencing the terrain. They're moving. And Bob Avakian is moving in relation to that. He's puncturing back. He's repolarizing. And he's showing people how we need to be understanding the world and what we need to be acting on in real time. In this time, when we are in a time that is unprecedented, where the norms of society are being ripped apart, where we're heading into an election season, where the rulers are at each other's throats in a way they haven't been since before the Civil War, when things are not going to stay as they were, you know, big changes are coming. This is real-time leadership to repolarize and train people to make a revolution in this time. And it just underscores the significance of, yes, the embryonic but important beginnings and the importance of scaling this up in a very accelerated way. So
yeah, that's right. So then that same strategic approach is what people should be applying on the ground. People should go to revcom.us and read Revolution Building Up the Basis to go for the whole thing with a real chance to win and be worked to applying that strategy wherever you are. Just a couple examples then as part of this campaign of some of the dynamism of the forces on the ground. The RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity in the Bay Area in relationship to the DNC did a very dynamic, creative, and in-your-face action. Let's watch the video.
We're out here bringing up truth from Bob Avakian that Kamala Harris is a mass incarcerator and a mass murderer. Kamala Harris is and can only be a representative of a capitalist system. We need a real revolution, and Bob Avakian is a leader for that revolution. You don't know who he is, you need to find out about him. At Bob Avakian Official. The problem is a capitalist imperialist system that's destroying the environment, bringing us closer to nuclear war. When America wins, you get oppression and destruction throughout the world. When America wins, you get the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. And you get what's going on in Palestine right now. Kamala Harris is a mass incarcerator and a representative of a white supremacist system. You can close the curtains on us, but you can't avoid the truth.
Hayes rules. We are here because we heard you're in love with a mass murderer
and a mass incarcerator. Kamala Harris locked up over 2,000 people for weed-related crimes. Right now, the DNC is a genocide convention, not the Democratic convention. You need to let go.
Quit getting played by the bourgeois electoral bullshit. Get with the real revolution. Fight the fascists and fight the Democrats.
So this is the kind of thing that I think people everywhere should, you know, be inspired by and learn from. And in that action, they were distributing BA social media messages. They were playing the audio. They've been postering up all over those areas, different signage. Actually, one of the comments we got on YouTube was someone saying, I saw one of your ads in San Francisco and I just came on here to say, F you, and communism is terrible. To which the RevCom Corps in the Bay Area said, thank you very much. Contribute to help spread those posters everywhere throughout society to trigger the anti-communist liberals.
To attract the ones who are serious about actually changing the world, not falling in love with mass murderers.
Exactly. So this is the kind of on the ground dynamism that needs to kick off that then can interpenetrate with and magnify what we're doing online, the contending on the internet, the contending on the ground to impact all of society in a really compressed time period.
And I know in Chicago, they are putting up the title of social media message from Bob Avakian, number 73, Black People Hating on Immigrants, Nonsense and Worse from People Who Should Know Better. And they're calling a discussion, a debate around this in their center in the south side of Chicago. The posters around the neighborhood and the announcements online have already kicked up a shitstorm of controversy in a very good way. This is going to be really important, these kinds of things that are interacting with the online and on the ground to spread Bob Avakian's voice and the leadership he's providing.
Yeah. And if people want to join the debate, go to the YouTube of number 73 and get in the comments on that as well.
So going forward, what can people do?
So the next few days is Labor Day. And by Monday night, we're aiming to raise $4,000 to kind of continue to advertise with the series of social media messages from Bob Avakian coming off the Democratic National Convention, where he's ripping into all the lies and the American chauvinism that people were piled on with and were being caught up in. So contribute to that. And with this, we put the goal smaller so that people would go out and spread and ask new people, be part of, you know, canvassing, shaking the can on the street, but also going to people you know and don't know and asking them to give to something that could really make all the difference in this time. And then the second big thing we want to do all together is by Monday night, be one of 100 people who shares Bob Avakian's social media on your Instagram or Facebook and tag at Bob Avakian Official. And we're going to tally the amounts as we go. And so stay tuned to revcom.us and at the revcoms, and you'll see how we're doing in spreading this and amplifying it.
And the final thing is next week, right after the Revolution Nothing Less show on next Thursday night, Annie and somebody else from the team leading the campaign is going to do a live YouTube talk back right after our show on this channel for everybody who's interested in this campaign, learning more about it, who's been part of it, who wants to get involved in it, who has ideas or questions about it, to talk together and to strengthen the online community going out to fight for this together. And so
tune in. You can ask us anything, raise your questions, the obstacles you're encountering. And there's a lot more that people can do than we're able to get into on this show. So go to revcom.us, sign up, write to us at getorganizedforrevolutiontour@gmail.com. And all across the country, we have to change the face of everything. And Bob Avakian's voice is the key way to do that. We want to play an interview that our correspondent Alan Goodman did recently with Shay Parnas, a spokesperson for the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem, on a major report that they released titled Welcome to Hell, on the systematic torture of Palestinians in Israeli prisons. As we are recording, a major military assault is underway in the northern part of the West Bank, occupied Palestine.
A large-scale Israeli military operation in the occupied West Bank is continuing into the second day. According to Palestinian sources, the death toll has now risen to 17 people since Israeli military operations began.
Israel is bragging that this is the most expansive military operation in the West Bank in years. Israeli military vehicles are tearing up roads. They've surrounded and blocked off hospitals. Reports are that they've entirely sealed off the city of Jenin with a population of 39,000. This comes after months of escalating Israeli violence in the West Bank, with over 650 Palestinians killed, including children, to say nothing of the genocidal slaughter going on in Gaza. Just today, Israeli Foreign Minister Israel Katz said on social media, "We must deal with the threat just as we deal with the terrorist infrastructure in Gaza, including the temporary evacuation of Palestinian residents and whatever steps are required." He said, "This is a war for everything and we must win it." This is straight up Nazi genocidal talk promising ethnic cleansing. And this is what is being fully backed and funded by genocide Joe Biden, war crimes Kamala Harris, and the system of U.S. capitalism imperialism. This needs to be opposed by all people of conscience now. Now here's Alan Goodman and Shay Parnas.
So I'm speaking with Shay Parnas, a spokesperson for the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem. And on August 5th, B'Tselem released a report titled "Welcome to Hell, the Israeli Prison System as a Network of Torture Camps." Shai, thank you for taking time from your important and courageous work in Israel to share the results of this investigation with our viewers. Can you paint a broad strokes picture of what the report reveals and maybe share a couple examples?
So, good morning, Alan. Thank you for inviting me. So the report, Welcome to Hell, contains 55 testimonies of all released Palestinian detainees from the entire region, Gazans, West Bankers, from East Jerusalem, and even for Israeli Palestinian citizens. And they were held in 16 Israeli prison facilities, 13 of them by the Israeli prison system, and 3 of them by the military. So we're talking both genders in this 55, and the youngest is 16, when the oldest is 65. So we're talking about people in different backgrounds, of course, both genders, spectrum of age, different facilities, different times. But what was remarkable, it in some way, they're all telling in rough lines pretty much the same story. They're all saying there was a constant beating and violence in the facility, lack of medical treatment or even mistreatment. They were even saying the same amounts of non-food they got, like in different facilities, about starvation, about lack of sanitations or hygienic supplies, being with the same underwear or shirt for weeks or even months, overcrowding in the cells, sometimes in a cell that should contain 6 inmates, there were up to 14. And that's pretty much in the entire testimonies. In some of them, there are even harsher torture, all the way to sexual assault, in the entire spectrum of sexual assault, all the way to rape and inserting objects into people's body parts. And some cases of inmates who were witnessing torture to death of fellow inmates.
The report describes vividly people dying over 12, 24 hours in front of their cellmates while their cellmates demanded care, begged for care, and the prison authorities were very aware that these people were dying. So maybe you could talk about that.
So if you will zoom out just for a second, it is 60 Palestinians detainees died while being held in Israeli authorities from October 7th. Some of them during transfers from one facility to other, some of them from violence and beatings while they were taken from Gaza to the prison. Some of them in prison from being beaten, and some of them from lack of medical treatment. In the report, there's three cases that we followed and investigate. One, as you mentioned, is a prisoner who was even beaten harsher than other prisoners. And he was, as you just said, he was crying for help the whole night while the person telling us about it was in the next cell. As he described it, when they came, the guards came in the morning for the routine count, and they yelled his name. Nobody answered. So they say, "Okay, what are you fooling with us?" And still, nobody answered. So as he described it, they entered the cell, still trying to wake him up, and like even touching him or kicking him, but he was already dead. And then he continues and describes that the medical team came pretty quick, tried to do what they can, but he was already dead. And then they just said, Allah yarahmu, and put him in a body bag. That's it.
Another thing that struck me in the report is how frequently and how brutally prisoners were beaten. Can you talk about just how pervasive and how brutal the beatings are in these centers?
It's pretty much constant, or they beat whenever they want. But what's usually in the framework of torture, it's during interrogations to get something from the detainee or to affect him in some reason, for some reason. But what we've seen, it's they don't even interrogate those people. Vast majority of the detainees we spoke with were released without any legal procedure. They weren't charged with anything, and they were released. So even by the Israeli authorities, the vast majority of them did nothing, but they were still beaten because that's what the Israeli prison system has become a network of torture camps.
Your report concludes with, and I'm going to read this, this reality is unacceptable and fills us, Israelis and Palestinians who believe in justice, freedom, and human rights, with shame, anxiety, and rage. Can you talk about that, why it's so important from your perspective?
Yeah, obviously, torture is prohibited and forbidden under any circumstances in the international humanitarian law. Every human being, no matter of his actions, is entitled to be treated as a human being, no matter his race, gender, and his action. It's a principle in international law, and Israel is a part to this anti-torture pact. But as we've seen, torture is still happening around the world and also in Israel. I would have to say about the emotions you speak. If we speak about the staff, who is a joint staff, Jewish, Israeli, and Palestinians, yeah, it's anxiety because who knows who's going to be next. And for the Palestinians, and what we said about jailing a project. But even for Jewish, with the full rights, when these tools and this procedure entering the system, you might be next. That's how the prison facilities of Israel now handling prisoners. It's going to be the same procedure, the same staff who will face even Jewish population.
I want to thank you for the time to do this interview, but also for the important and courageous work that you and your organization are doing. Can you tell our viewers your website, where they can find this report and learn more about B'Tselem, and anything else you want to say before we end?
B'Tselem.org. All investigations and reports are published both in English, Hebrew, and Arabic. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and visit our YouTube channel, and help us protect human rights in the area.
Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs, and follow @BobAvakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long judgment day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. No, 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 no. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Change the world. What it used to be.
Do it alone.
Do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
Wake up, everybody. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up.
Wake up.
Everybody, no more sleeping in bed, no more back to thinking.
America, y'all. Come on. You preachers, stop preaching what you teach. Teach the truth. Wake up, preachers. The liars.
Teach the babies.
Teach the children.
Teach the babies. They're the one who's